Welcome to the Midlife Midsters Podcast, your podcast for inspiration on being bold and saying yes to making the most of midlife.
We're so glad you joined us today. I'm Carmen.
I'm Marianne.
I'm Leslie Ann.
I'm Marla.
And I'm Gretel Lynch.
And today we are talking with Gretel, quote, Tully Lynch, the founder of Tully Bomber Direct. The mission of her company is assisting people with organizing, paring down, or dismantling an entire home. So by way of background, she has an undergraduate degree in art history and a master of decorative arts. Her undergraduate degree is from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. And tell me, is that also your master degree?
No, decorative arts was at Glasgow.
It's Glasgow. She spent years in high-end auction and home furniture retail before starting her own firm. I think it was about 10 years ago, if I recall correctly. Her lifelong passion for fine and decorative art combined with an extensive knowledge of home furnishings, design, and more recently, feng shui, has made Tully a go-to resource for making your home a beautiful, warm, and welcoming place. She also possesses the knowledge and compassion to help people downsize or clear out family members' home after a move to assisted living or a death, which I have had experience with her on this, so we can talk about that. So we invited her here today. She's a fellow Arlingtonian. She has two daughters, both of whom are in college. They're the same age as my kids, so we spent a lot of time together in the choir room at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. So welcome, Tully.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think the first question we have is that a couple of us know you as Gretel and a couple of us know you as Tully. So you have to tell us what to call you and why.
You can call me Gretel because I think most of you in the room know me as Gretel. Marianne knows me as Tully. So sorry, Marianne, you're going to have to like switch her. But it really doesn't matter. I was saying to Marianne, like, just as we're all, you know, nieces and mothers and aunts and daughters and sisters, were, you know, Gretel and Tully, just it, whatever you're comfortable with.
I know. Was it a nickname?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gretel, I like it. You suit Tully.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very cute.
Thanks.
So can you tell us, I don't think I know this part of your story. So I know that you had worked in very high-end retail and also in auction houses, and you have, you know, the master's degree and everything. But how did you make the leap from that to more of the downsizing and consolidation of homes? Because it's different.
Yeah. First of all, retail. Okay. So auction houses are great, like super fun. You get to work with thousands of objects a year. But there's very little income in auction houses. Even your highest end silver dealer at Sotheby's in New York is not making a lot of money because those employees typically come from private family money, so they don't have to get paid a lot. So I couldn't afford to work at auction houses anymore. And then I worked in retail in Old Town Alexandria for 17 years, which was great. I really enjoyed the people I worked with. I enjoyed my clients. But at some point, I started to feel this shift. First of all, retail's really hard. So next time you're in a shop, just say thank you to the people that work there because it's exhausting work. And I just felt this emptiness of selling expensive dining room tables to people. I didn't feel like I was helping people. You were helping them pick out, you know, $600 dining room chairs, but it kind of left me empty at the end of the day. And often with the people that were buying furniture, they'd turn to me and go, what do I do with my old dining room table? What do I do with the oriental rug that I don't want anymore that was my parents'? Like, that's my problem. And I was like, oh, how do you solve that problem? And my experience in auction houses, I was steering them in ways to sell it or get rid of it or make some money or donate it or whatever. So I felt like that's when they were really thankful. Right. When I was solving that problem for them, they could go in and buy an expensive dining room table from anyone. But I was the one who was handing out information on the side of how do you get rid of stuff. And I just at the end of the day, I really wanted to help people and I wanted my own business. And I've always been incredibly organized. Right? I've never lost a set of keys. I've never lost my passport. My house, Carmen will testify, Carmen was in my house a half an hour ago. Everything is not neat and tidy. Like, it doesn't look like a showroom, but I know where my passport is. I know where the dental floss is. Like, everything has a home. It's not always in the home. And so some of my retail clients, I'd go in and they're like, can you measure for my dining room table? I'm like, sure, but can we talk about the 20 boxes of paperwork that's on your existing dining room table? They're like, oh, that's been there for 8 years. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, so I just wanted to branch out, have my own business. And I just thought, you know, every time I took a risk in life, it paid off. And I just figured, you know, start your own business. And I came from a family of entrepreneurs. And if it didn't pan out after 18 months, then I could go back and get a JOB. But I really took off, and I love what I do now. It's really helping people. I would say 90% of my visits with clients end in a hug. And they tell me, they're like, you're changing my life.
Well, I'm curious about something. So we will focus on what you do now and how you help people. But I want to get a picture of how you were as a child. Were you very organized? Did you go into your aunt's house and love all her objects? Yeah. Were you a collector? Yeah. Because of your master's degree and liking art and so forth, right. I really want to get a picture of how you were as a child.
Yeah, so I always liked fine things. I didn't grow up with a very affluent family, but I loved polishing my mom's silver spoons that were like handed down from her family. I wanted to hear the history of the spoons and why they were engraved a certain way. My own room, my poor parents, I moved furniture around my 9x9 bedroom all the time. You know, they would just sit there and look at the ceiling as I was like pushing furniture around. I'd break down my bed. I'm like, I don't need the bed frame anymore. It's just a mattress on the floor. And then 6 weeks later, I'm like, where's the headboard? And, you know, so I liked decorating. I liked kind of playing with stuff. And my mother and I used to go antiquing. And again, I didn't grow up with a lot of means, but my mother would pull out some nasty mirror and she'd be like, oh, we can paint this, or we could, you know. So I've always loved home furnishings. I've loved kind of making something out of nothing, and then, or saving up for something that was really exquisite, and just really admiring good porcelains, great rugs, beautiful art. You know, some of the art that's in my house, I picked up at $50, you know, flea market sales, but it's worth to me, you know, more than anything I've bought at an art gallery.
How fun. What is your favorite thing to collect?
I love art. I love fine art. I love rugs. If I had more square footage, I already have rugs upon rugs. So fine art and rugs are really my Achilles. And English porcelain.
You got a few. Yeah.
Can we go to that for a second? Because I think that the meaning of things is really important. And one of the things we want to talk about, particularly in midlife, and I'll give a little bit of background about Gretel and me and how we have become as close as we have. We knew each other and our kids when our kids were little, and our kids did choir together for a long time, and our older daughters especially were close friends. But the real transition came when my father-in-law died after my brother-in-law had died unexpectedly like 3 months before, and my poor husband was at his complete wit's end because we had a house in Los Angeles, California with his parents' stuff, and we had literally no idea how we were going to get this house ready for sale. My husband was really at his wit's end. He did not know what to do. And he was just, and I said, you know that woman, Gretel from church, that Isabel's really good friends with her daughter? I'm like, I think she does this for a living. And so my husband is very kind of serious. And I said, would you just entertain a conversation with her? And I'll never forget, Gretel came over and sat on our sofa. And within 5 minutes, the two of us were like, oh my goodness, we have no idea what we're doing. And here is our savior. And I'm not going to make this an ad for this because I know you don't really do this. But I was like, if I buy you a plane ticket to California and I pay you, will you come and help us do this? And in 5 days, we cleaned out a 3,200 square foot house and completed an entire estate sale, all at Gretel's direction. And my favorite part is that my 6'6" husband, here's tiny little Gretel, like, Matt, I really need you to do this. Okay.
That's impressive.
I think the part that was the most meaningful to me was it's very hard to describe, but it was like the care with which you took the assignment, and also what is the meaning of things and how does that change as you get into midlife and older?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole psychology with it, right? I mean, we bring things, objects into our lives purposely and sometimes subconsciously, or sometimes you inherit them, and all of those things in your life impact you, sometimes positively, sometimes negatively, sometimes it's a complete dead neutral. And when I go into people's homes, I am not judging why you have that object. I have no interest in judging why you have 6 black cashmere sweaters. Like, I don't care. I'm just the voice of reason of, hey, why, you know, why all these black cashmere sweaters, you know, if you want to downsize. But the psychology of how you got there, immediately clients are judging themselves. And I have to be respectful of that and be very careful of that and mindful of that, because they are coming to it with a guilty conscience of, why do I have all this stuff? Or why do I even have a little bit of stuff? Because in their mind, they're having to defend why they own this mug, why they own this sweater. And I'm not asking them to defend it. I'm just asking, is it important enough for you to put your labor into owning it? Because everything you own is your responsibility. You have to steward that object through its natural life.
It's interesting you say that, because we talked a little bit before and I said to you, when we were downsizing our house, that primary thing I felt was guilt.
Yep.
Just looking in the attic and thinking, why do I have all this?
Yep.
And I guess I kind of approached it like a sunk cost. I already bought it. I mean, I can't really worry about why I have it. It's just here. I got to get rid of it. But I have a question for you about that, which is, when you work with a family, like Carmen was saying, you know, Matt kind of went along, but what happens when you work with folks who one spouse feels more attached to something than another spouse? How do you get them on the same page?
She's a miracle worker.
No, it's like, I mean, I'm divorced, so I probably shouldn't say this, but it's like marriage, right? It's a compromise. I worked with a couple who the husband had every paperback he had ever bought, and from high school, and here he is in his mid-70s. And his wife was like, you have to get Richard to get rid of all of his paperbacks. And I'm like, okay, Richard, you know, let's look at these paperbacks. And when you pull out paperbacks from like the 1960s, 70s, they're terrible, right? They're yellow. The print is terrible. There's no white space. I mean, no one really wants to read those volumes, those editions from that long ago, because they're just not friendly. But I could tell Richard was not going to get rid of any of these paperbacks. Like, it was a hard no. And so I turned to his wife and I said, I think he gets to keep his paperbacks. Like, let's make sure they're on a bookshelf. Let's make sure that they are not on the floor. They're not a tripping hazard. You know, let's organize them in such a way that he can enjoy them and pull them out and share them with friends and whatnot. But I'm not an organizer who goes in and grabs things out of people's hands and says, this is ridiculous, you shouldn't own this. I'm just the voice of reason. I worked with a client today who came across a bunch of clothes that had been chewed by mice, literally at the hemline, a whole closet full of mouse-eaten clothes. And she started to say, well, I could cut it off, I could hem it, I could, you know, revive it. But her house is teeming with clothes. And so my voice of reason is just, hey, you've got all these beautiful clothes that are in gorgeous condition. Maybe we should let the clothes that have been chewed by mice, let it go. But when you're talking about spouses and the back and forth, it's just a I don't like playing bad cop, good cop with couples. Usually by the time people call me in, they're ready. And if the husband's not ready, I don't abide by the wife going, well, when he's not here, let's get rid of all the paperbacks. Like, I'm not going to do that. Like, don't do that to me. Like, don't put that on me. But it's, usually by the time people call me into their homes, they are ready. They are ready. It's I equate what I do a lot to the analogy of having a personal trainer. Can you do it yourself? Sure. But just like you can take yourself out for a run. But unless a personal trainer shows up to your door and says, time to put on the sneakers, we're going for a run, then you're going to go for a run because you're paying them. Likewise, when I show up, people are like, okay, it's time to get organized. And being organized also means traditionally you're going to have to let go of some things. Sometimes people think you're going to come in and organize all the stuff they already have when they already have too much stuff. But then I tell them it's like going into the hairdresser and saying, I want a completely different look, but you can't cut or color my hair. Well, I can't just rearrange all the stuff you have without getting rid of the underbrush. And so usually by the time people call me in, they're like, they know they've got just years of what I call underbrush that needs to be let go.
How many rice cookers did we sell? 5?
A lot.
9
of underbrush.
Baseball boys. Yeah,
what
of
is
underbrush.
The average age? Is it usually when somebody is moving from one location to the next, like into an assisted living, or somebody's downsizing? Are your clients a specific age?
No, okay. No, it really varies. I mean, I get people that are in their late 20s all the way to their early 80s. Okay. And, you know, sometimes it's usually something has broken down, right? Either you've moved or maybe you've had a death in the family and you've inherited just boxes and boxes of stuff. And you're like, I know there's stuff in those boxes and boxes from my aunt's house or my grandparents' house or my parents' house that I'd like to weed into my house. But how do I make room for that? And it, you know, I tell people I can't reinvent physics. You know, we can't just absorb thousands of objects into your house when your house is already fully furnished. But you have to be patient with people, and you have to treat it with some tenderness. Like, I understand this is traumatic for a lot of people to let go.
I'm sure all the memories is going to be one of the biggest tackles, but versus maybe the OCD where somebody has 10 of one thing.
Oh, the memories are hard, and sometimes you're holding people at like they're really most vulnerable. I worked with a woman a few years ago whose husband had passed away after a long battle with cancer. She was moving to assisted living. She had to move out of a 6,000 square foot house into a one bedroom apartment. And
wow.
And her husband had kept everything because they were in a 6,000 square foot house. He had Bell Atlantic bills from the 1980s. And whenever I start a project like that, I always ask, is there anything in the house that you're missing? Like jewelry, passports, you know, anything, you know, I need to be really cognizant of that we are keeping a sharp eye out for. And she said, there's a lockbox in my husband's office that I think has important papers, but I've never been able to find the key. And it's been 2 years now. So weeks go by, finally find the key. I said, I think this is the key. She puts it in the lockbox. She opens it up. And on top of the lockbox is a letter to his wife that he had written that started, if you're reading this letter, I must have died.
Oh my gosh.
And like, of course, she just sat down, started crying. I went upstairs, made her a cup of tea, you know, and just kind of gave her all the space she needed to have. Because you're working in people's homes. I mean, it's incredibly intimate. Like, your home is the most perfect art form, right? I mean, you live in an art form, and what you choose to surround yourself with is a reflection, really, of who, what you value, who you are, what your history is, what your family's history is.
It's true. You know, you were talking earlier about there being life events, right, that are often the impetus for downsizing. But I think one of the things I found in terms of being in midlife is that you kind of know that maybe it's time to sort of shed a few layers, right? You just should be doing it. Mm-hmm. And And I decided to, you know, venture and do that. And I am not organized, and I am not good at getting rid of things. I have to figure out where to donate. And so everything takes that much longer. And so I was going through the underbrush of memories and artwork that my kids created when they were 3 years old, and felt like I had to ask them about each thing that I was ready to either give away or to toss. And that's pretty overwhelming. But also, we have very different feelings about those items. My feelings about them as a parent, and my guilt even in asking if it's okay if I throw this, you know, finger painting away, you know, where your kids are probably like, they don't even remember that it was sitting in the attic for the last 30 years. So how do you sort of help with that psychological and that personal feeling of guilt or a barrier that we just can't get past?
Right. Well, at the end of the day, it's just stuff, right? I mean, when you die, no one at your funeral is going to say, wow, Marla had some really good stuff. And when it comes to children's memorabilia, I have to tell you, this next generation just really does not want stuff. I think they've seen us burdened by it. They've seen our parents burdened by it. And they want their money spent on experiences, not things, right? Which is why China, silver, crystal, they're just not on wedding registers anymore. I think that's a whole nother podcast. I think we need a new Martha Stewart of the 21st century to kind of bring that back. And I think the pendulum will swing again. But yeah, I see parents, including my own, who would come to my house with just boxes of swim trophies and yearbooks and, you know, letters and, you know, cheerleading costumes. And if your kids are really mean, they'll just take that box and march it to the curb in front of you. That's mean. Because here you have been like stewarding your children's childhood in banker's boxes, like 12 of them for each child. And then they can be really cruel about it. But if your child is somewhat compassionate, they'll take it. And then I'll be honest with it, they are quietly disposing of it. For young parents, I work with some young families. I tell them, for every child, in terms of artwork and homework and those funny essays and whatnot, you just keep one plastic bin that fits under their bed. And every year you put the best of the best in it. And at the end of every school year, my girls and I would pull out that bin and weed through again. And just be like, well, if we're adding 12 things, we're taking 12 things out of it. And so each of my girls have a small bin of school memorabilia. The two of them combined have one bin of their favorite childhood books. Maybe a baptismal gown, maybe, you know, but really, you know, our kids don't want stuff.
They don't even want to hold on to text messages for as long as their mother wants to hold on to them.
Right. But I mean, occasionally you get it. I'll run across a young person who's really sentimental or a collector. And I like that kind of delights me. I'm like, ooh, the unicorn, right? Like, they love their Matchbox cars or whatever. Keep them. But like, you know, make sure they're kept safe and that you're enjoying them, that you pull them out from time to time, that they're not just languishing somewhere.
I was really struck what you said a moment ago about like your home is art. Mm-hmm. And I had never actually thought about that. But as soon as you said it, it struck a chord. And I guess what I was wondering is, I think people, as a general rule, get into like a place of being where, like, you know, you see these people who never change their hair. And they still dress the way they did in high school. And I think their homes often reflect the first way they decorated it. So I wonder if you encounter clients who are sort of consciously saying, I want to express myself differently through my home, as opposed to just, we've got all this new stuff coming in. And is that a different path to, you know, cleaning out?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, that kind of brings in the whole feng shui concept of feng shui is the concept that every object in our lives has an energy, and that energy is constantly changing. Your home, your energy of your home is constantly changing, and it should be. And clutter, unused stagnant clutter is a terrible thing for feng shui because it doesn't allow the energy to kind of keep moving. So yeah, futons have to go, right? Like occasionally you have people, you know, we're like, well, I bought it in college. I'm like, you're 52 years old. Like and wives will be like, tell my husband the futon has to go. And I'm like, okay, that's where I'm putting my foot down. The futon does have to go. You know, I think it was Hegel who said, architecture is the highest art form because you live in it. And I, likewise, your home should be evolving, you know, to your point, you know, just if you get stuck, you know, with the same haircut, if you get stuck, you need to kind of tend to your house, and you need to pull what isn't working and bring in something new that delights you. Like everything in your house you should pick up and just be like, I love that. You know, it should either be purposeful. We're going back to William Morris, who wrote this in 1861. I'm going to paraphrase here. 1861, William Morris said, everything in your home should be absolutely beautiful or completely useful. And I abide by that. I think that's a good rule of thumb. If you pick it up and you're like, oh, my mother-in-law gave this to me on my wedding day, you know, that was 25 years ago. It's really not my style anymore. Let it go. You know, you might still have a beautiful relationship with your mother-in-law. You might still remember her giving you that present on your wedding day. But that coaster does not serve you anymore. Let it go, so that when you're shopping with your friends in St. Michael's and you see a cute set of coasters, like, that's what I want in my home. Like, you don't want your house to be a time warp.
So I find, and I've been thinking a lot about this, obviously, and I'm like, okay, after this, I'll just hire you and I can tell you exactly what I need to be doing. But this notion of freeing yourself and just saying, let it go, right? That's not that easy to do, right? And there's always a reason. I started when I got divorced. I was just waiting until my husband got all of his things out of the attic, because then I'd have room in the attic and I could go up there and I could move things around and I could think. And well, then it was too hot in the attic, you know, it was too cold in the attic. And then you become paralyzed with not being able to take that first step. And so I know, I guess I'm probably a perfect candidate for assistance, but how do people sort of get over that initial hurdle that I know I need to do this? Maybe I feel guilty. Maybe it's just not my thing. Maybe I'm not that disciplined. I mean, they're all, or maybe I'm just a procrastinator, or actually maybe I'll just blame it on my parents. Okay, actually, and all of my cousins will agree.
Here's the good news. Going back to the personal trainer, as you begin to let go of things, I tell my clients you are exercising a muscle in letting go. So the first few things you let go can be a little traumatic. Here's a fun little trick you can do, is you put it in a box. If you really, you know, if you're organizing things and you're like, definitely let it go. I don't know. Like, this could be hard for me. I know it doesn't really serve my life anymore, but I don't know. You can put it in a box that says, Marla, in June of 2024, if you haven't opened this box, just take it directly to donation.
I have a box in my attic. I literally have a box in my attic, you know, a big plastic bin, because I did get organized a little bit. Like, I could do this a little at a time. And it has a piece of masking tape. Okay. It's a long time ago. Yeah. That says memories. Okay. I do not know the last time I opened that box. So
I think I find it harder to
I can get rid of my things. I actually go through my house about every 6 months and purge. It's harder for me to let go of things that my family, my parents and my grandparents have given me, and they had been such good custodians. They had memories tied to it, and now I feel somewhat of a responsibility, and it is a burden. Husband's even worse. So that between the two of us, I don't think we, either of us, really have that barrier of something we purchased and getting rid of. It's really the family heirlooms that come down. Any advice?
Well, yeah, I had, yes, my advice would be your ancestors, should they be deceased, are looking down from heaven going, why?
Get rid
of it. Why, Marianne, do you still have that tablecloth? I never liked it. You know, it's got a terrible stain of coffee on it.
And hey, that'll be my new narrative in the head.
Marianne? It's stuff, right? And I think sometimes people hand you stuff, especially family members, because they don't want it anymore. And it's like, well, now they're like just shunting their stuff off on you.
Sometimes it's that. Sometimes it's their prized possessions that they've left you. So that's the harder piece. But yeah, I just need to change that narrative and let it go.
Well, or let it go. Yeah, let it go.
Is that the Frozen song?
Who will, you know, I think we talked about your husband's toy soldier collection.
Yes.
You know, you let it go to someone who's actually going to really enjoy it and put it on display and really treasure it. Like, you're giving the object new life and you're unburdening yourself from it. And, you know, again, like, I threw out a pair of side chairs that belonged to my grandparents because they were small. They were rickety. Like, it was going to be too much money to refurbish them. I didn't have place for them, even if I did spend $600 a chair to refurbish them. And I put them out to the trash. And I watched the garbage truck take those things away. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, the world is going to split open. And guess what? Nothing happened.
Nothing happened. Earth didn't shake. I like what you said, though, you giving it away and giving it new life. Yeah. That's perfect.
Will you tell the story about the Betty Saar painting in my in-law's house, like... This is a great example of giving. And it was funny. It was one of the most valuable painting in their home, but we had literally, none of us had ever noticed
it. Yeah. It was a darling little sketch. It wasn't even a painting. And it was maybe only, 4 inches by 6 inches. And I pulled Carmen's husband, Matt, over to it. And I said, what do you know about this work of art? Is this more? And he goes, I don't even remember that it's been here. And I said, well, it's actually a work of art by a very famous American artist. And he's like, what? And I said, I've put $900 on it. He said, are you kidding me? He said, what are you talking about? He's like, I thought it would have been like $10 at the estate sale. And I said, no. And I advertised that we did have a piece of art by her. And sure enough, a young man came to the estate sale and he was looking at it. And he said, you know, I'm an art historian. My wife and I always wanted a piece by her. And this is the perfect size. And it's in our budget, but, you know, could you negotiate a little bit? And so I talked to Matt. And
I think she was like I think they were teachers. I don't think they made a lot of money. And
no.
They were
just besotted with it. And we did. We ended up coming to a price that was reasonable for us and for them. And they walked away like clutching this.
Oh, God, I still remember the looks on their faces.
They were just so elated. Mm-hmm. And Matt was like, oh, great. Matt was like, great, the money. But I was just like, great, it's got a new home.
Yeah.
Right. And by people who really, really were appreciating it.
This is a little off topic, but it was something that you said earlier that I thought was interesting. So the way that you got into this business and obviously it's brought you a great deal of joy. And so you kind of had your own sort of beginning midlife work transition, which I think is great because that's something else we're talking about this season. But I'm curious, like, where do you see it going next?
That's a really great question. I think I'll probably want to eventually delve more into feng shui. Because there are other organizers out there. And I feel like after 10 years, I've helped people try to figure out where to put their gallstones, literally. Yeah. I had a client. She came up to me with like a little jar of gallstones and she's like, where should I put these? I'm like, are we
stop.
Well, Gretel, did you help us with some dead bodies?
Yeah. Ashes. Let's say ashes.
Three sets of ashes that we had.
Okay. The earth may split. Let's stop.
But yeah, I've pretty much seen and done it all in terms of organizing, and I still enjoy doing that, but I really I think I could move on to the highway of I'm certified in feng shui through the Luminescence School, and really help people make their home an oasis where they come home and everything feels like a sanctuary. And part of that is still decluttering. When I was taking my feng shui class, my instructor was like, we're going to do a segment on decluttering. And she was like, and Gretel might just take over this part of the class for us. But Marla, to your question earlier, like, where do you start? Just start anywhere. Start with one box. And like I said, the more muscle you start to build up, and if you really feel like you're getting stuck, I would say hire an organizer. And I tell people, like, I'll just come for 3 or 4 hours, and you can, after 3 or 4 hours, go, oh, now I get it. You've given me a method. You've given me some tools. You've given me some tips. And you could say, bye. Thank you. I think I've got this. Or look at me and go, that's great. When can you come back for another 3 hours? To answer your question, Leslie, and I think, you know, if Washington, D.C. has the palette for it, because I think feng shui can get a bad rap, but really the end goal is to make your home a sanctuary, something that loves you when you walk in.
It's been so interesting watching Leslie Ann. So she hasn't brought it up, but it always seems so daunting to me to go through a whole home, all my kids' things, and she did a big downsize.
I know.
And we heard the stories and the objects. And every once in a while, she'd post something on Facebook that came up. And it was just, it was entertaining. But also, I see you on the other side now, that you seem so liberated and free of so many things.
Yeah.
And there's a happiness to you. You've always been happy. But you talk about, like, having less burden. And
that's why when you said about art, your house is art, that's why it struck me, because I actually feel now so much happier in my home. Mm-hmm. I feel like it reflects who we are now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was, like, we got new furniture. We had furniture that was fine, but it was like, it was old, and mm-hmm. it was reflective of what we wanted 25 years ago.
Right.
And we were like, hey, if we're moving, someone will buy this. Someone will buy this bedroom furniture. Someone will buy this dining room furniture, and we can do fresh new things.
Yep.
So I totally resonate with what you say, because it's how I came out of this process.
Right. And at the end of the day, you know, to quote the Minimalists, who are two amazing guys, if you've listened to their podcasts or watched their Netflix documentary, I highly recommend it, to get you in the mood of letting go. Their tagline is, your stuff should be working for you. You shouldn't be working for your stuff. So if you're spending every weekend tinkering with a closet or, like, you know, rearranging your crap, then something's wrong. Your stuff should be aiding your life.
That's good advice.
That is great advice. I think that's great place to end.
I'm thinking about it more. In my room with all these t-shirts. And I'm like, okay, I gotta go home now.
And one more thing I would like to share is that, you know, in terms of the guilt factor of why we have so much in our lives, consumer consumption in this country is a machine, and it is a very powerful machine. Companies are spending tens of millions of dollars for you to let go of your money to buy their stuff. So do not feel badly, but when you're out shopping, when you're out looking for one thing and you come home with six, there's a real psychology to that. And you have to kind of go into Target with a body of armor and be like, I'm going in for a Rubbermaid bath mat, and that is it. And when you're reaching for a pillowcase and you already have 16 at home, you have to like stop and think and be like, wow, what am I doing? And the more you, Leslie Ann could probably say to this, more you let go, the more you are so much more disciplined about what you bring back into your home. But you know, the other side of downsizing is consumerism. And I'm a capitalist, you know, like I'm not saying like, you know, I'm not going to try to like put a, you know, a wrench in the wheel. All I'm saying is just be mindful and flipping Amazon Prime and all that stuff. Like just really use it judiciously and be mindful, like be intentional with your purchasing.
I think that's a great place to end. Gretel, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
It was really nice. And we'll have more work to do at some point.
Thank you for joining us. You can find us at AmericanMidsters.com.